United 93, 350,
roger. United 93, that traffic view is 1 o'clock, 12 miles eastbound, 370.
Negative contact, we're looking at United 93.
Somebody call Cleveland. United 93, verify 350. United 93, verify your flight level 350. United 93, verify your level of 350. United 93, Cleveland. United 93, Cleveland. United 93, did you hear Cleveland Center identified, please? United 1523, did you hear your company, did you hear some interference on the frequency here a couple of minutes ago, screaming?
Yes, I did, 797, and we couldn't tell what it was either.
Okay. United 93, Cleveland, if you hear the center ident.
American 1060, ditto on the other transmission.
American 1060, you heard that also?
Yes, sir, twice.
Roger, we heard that also, thanks. I just wanted to confirm it wasn't some interference.
Is that 956?
Rejected 956, go.
Oh, we're just answering your call. We did hear that yelling, too.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, we're just trying to figure out what's going on.
They got the piece to dock. Keep remaining sitting. We have a ball aboard. So it's set.
Calling Cleveland Center, you're unreadable. Say again slowly.
Sir, did you hear the transmission? Was that your buddy that said he had a bomb aboard?
Say again. Was that United 93?
Yeah, that transmission, he said, was unreasonable. It sounded like someone said they have a bomb on board.
That's what we thought. We just we didn't get it clear. Is that United 93 calling? Executive 956, that aircraft we believe was transmitting is 12 o'clock, 5 miles, turn left, heading 225. I'll get you away from him. Okay, he's climbing, so I want to keep everybody away from him.
Okay, I think we got him in sight.
Delta 1989, that traffic views at 11 o'clock and 15 miles southbound. 41 climbing, looks like he's turning east while heading 360.
Hi, here's the captain. I would like to remain seated. We have one aboard and are going to back to the airport. And we have our demand, so please remain quiet.
Okay, it's United 93 calling. United 93, understand you have a bomb on board. Go ahead. Executive 956, did you understand that transmission?
Affirmative, he said there was a bomb on board.
And that was all you got out of it also?
Affirmative.
93, go ahead.
That aircraft, he can't get a hold of. Has he turned to the east now?
He's just turned to the east also. United 93, you hear Cleveland Center. Okay, American 106 and Executive 956, we just lost the target on that aircraft.
Okay, 956, we had a visual on it, just stand by.
Do you have a visual on him now?
We did, but we lost him at the turn.
You can make a turn back to a 220 heading. Let me know if you can see him.
Yeah, he's still there. We got him for 956.
He's still there. Northwest would be about 25 miles.
Affirmative for 956.
Executive 956, heading 180.
Hey, we're making a turn for 956. He appears to be heading right towards us.
American 1060, do you see anybody northwest of you? Can you shoot back that far there?
We're looking now, sir.
United 93, Cleveland, do you still hear the center? United 93, do you still hear Cleveland? United 93, United 903, do you hear Cleveland? United 93, United 93, Cleveland. United 93, United 93, do you hear Cleveland Center?
Do you see any activity on your right side, smoke or anything like that?
Negative, we're searching. Yeah, we do have a smoke puff now at about, probably 2 o'clock. It appears to be just a dark cloud, like a puff of black smoke.
That was a transmission from air traffic controllers, other planes in the area, and from United Airlines Flight 93, hijacked and crashed into a field in Pennsylvania. Some believe shot down. On September 11, 2001, a day we will remember forever, what really happened on that day? The day planes crashed into a field, into buildings, and thousands of people died. There are, as I see it, five potential explanations. That this was entirely the work of Al-Qaeda and Arab hijackers. That the government had prior knowledge of the attack, but that their incompetence allowed the attack to happen. That the government knew the attack was coming and consciously allowed it to happen. The government ran the entire operation. Or that a group that puts itself above government, working with Al-Qaeda types, ran the operation. In 2004, a Zogby poll showed that half of the New Yorkers believe that U.S. leaders had foreknowledge of impending 9/11 attacks and consciously failed to act. In a moment, our special roundtable discussion on 9/11, perspectives from four Americans. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our special 9/11 roundtable discussion. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Four guests first. I will have each guest, I will introduce them, allow them to make a statement, ask them a few questions, then we will move on to our next guest, and then open up the discussion to all four. Peter Lantz is a five-time Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter, now working as a screenwriter and novelist with a master's degree from Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism and a J.D. degree from Fordham University School of Law. Lantz spent the first 15 years of his career as a print reporter and network correspondent. In 1981, he became investigative correspondent for ABC News. Lantz was a member of the first American crew into Indochina after the end of the Vietnam War. He chased rebel insurgents through Laos and members of the Gambino family through the toxic wastelands of New Jersey. He tracked knife-happy surgeons in the Deep South and nuclear terrorists through the twisted streets of Antwerp. Then in 1987, he took a break from nonfiction. Lantz came to L.A., began working as a writer and story editor for Michael Mann on two of his acclaimed series, Crime Story and Miami Vice. In 1989, he became the co-executive producer and showrunner on the fourth season of Wise Guy. And in 1993, he co-created Missing Persons. Following the 9/11 attacks, Lantz began investigating the origins of the FBI's original probe of the World Trade Center bomber Ramzi Ahmed Yusuf. He was on our program on April 18, 2005, when we talked about his two books, 1,000 Years for Revenge, Cover-Up. Tonight on the roundtable discussion, Peter Lantz. Peter, welcome to the show. How are you, Peter?
Great to be with you, and I applaud what you do, George, because as we know, the mainstream media has pretty much abdicated this story, or they just give the party line, and consistently you push the edge of the envelope in the interest of full disclosure, and I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Peter. Peter, what I'd like to do is just give you a couple minutes, 2 to 3 minutes. If you get close to that time, I'll let you know. Okay. To just give me a statement, your overview on this subject of 9/11.
Okay. Of the four scenarios that you enunciated, I guess you said five. Ultimately.
I added another one.
Yeah, kind of a trilateral commission illuminati fifth scenario. I believe in the first three in varying degrees, and it's possible to they're not mutually exclusive. I think one of the things that I've tried to do is I've tried to focus on evidence that can be provable. So I focused on the New York office of the FBI, the Southern District of New York, which were the Bin Laden offices of origin. All the cases relating to 9/11 terrorism, the original World Trade Center bombing are posited in that office. And I read 40,000 pages of trial transcripts. I interviewed dozens of FBI agents inside and outside of the bureau, number of witnesses over time, and I traced the path of 9/11 back to 1989. And one of the problems I find with people who are strong advocates of this theory that the government actually did this is that they diminished the threat from Al-Qaeda, which is an extremely lethal entity and remains one, and also in doing that they fail to focus on accountability for those people who are still in our government, who are still in positions of authority with respect to national security, specifically in the Justice Department and the FBI, people who failed and, I believed, engaged in affirmative acts of obstruction of justice. So if you just focus on saying, well, the government caused it, and you don't look at how Al-Qaeda was this lethal threat and how for 12 years various aspects of the Justice Department and the Bureau, along with the CIA, ignored evidence or failed to connect the dots, we're never going to be able to restructure the intelligence apparatus properly. I do believe what Justice Learned Hand said. They called him the 10th Justice in the Second Circuit. He said, from a multitude of tongues comes the truth. I have a huge amount of respect for David Ray Griffin. He quoted parts of my book, Cover Up, in his book, Commissions, Omissions and Distortions. Mike Levine and I recently were on, I was on his program twice in New York on WVAI. I have great respect for him. I don't really know Alex, but all of us are in the business of trying to find the truth and full disclosure. And I think it's a mistake to pit, and not that you have done this, but people are always looking for people in the 9/11 truth community to argue with each other and fight against each other. I, for one, don't believe a missile went into the Pentagon. However, I think it's absolutely essential that the government release the videos to prove it one way or another. And if it turns out that David Ray and some of the others who believe this are right, I'll be the first one, with them, united to get the full truth. So I'm basically a full disclosure advocate. My area of expertise is the Justice Department and the FBI, and those are the areas I'd like to stick with tonight because I'd like to be able to talk about what I can prove and what I know about.
And let me ask you this, Peter, before we move on to David Ray Griffin to get his opening remarks. Do you believe that at this point we are safer now than before 9/11?
Absolutely the opposite. We're in such great danger now, and that for several reasons. First of all, as I said, a number of the same individuals are still in positions of authority. Two of the people that I have named in my book, Cover Up, that I believe covered up the Al-Qaeda connection to the crash of TWA-800, which I say is the second biggest mass murder and act of terror in American history, that there was an affirmative cover-up. One of them is the U.S. attorney in Chicago, who's the special prosecutor in the Ambassador Wilson leak probe, Patrick Fitzgerald. He is trying to put journalists away for not revealing their sources. And the other one is Valerie Caproni, general counsel to the FBI. 2 weeks ago, she was on the Hill campaigning for this extraordinary new authority to have the FBI be able to do searches beyond the Fourth Amendment. Now, I've always said, George, in the 3.5 years I've been doing this research, we did not need the Patriot Act. We absolutely, if people had just done their jobs, 9/11 could have been prevented. I also think that with respect to our safety, Iraq was such a catastrophic blunder. It united Baathists with Sunni Islamists who would have cut their throats prior to the invasion. It turned the Arab street against America. We're in a protracted, unending insurgency. It is Vietnam, and instead of the metaphor that it was like invading Mexico for Pearl Harbor, it was absolutely dead on target. Afghanistan proper, but not enough and not soon enough and not enough firepower to get bin Laden, but absolutely Iraq was a catastrophe, and it's getting worse day by day.
All right, Peter, stand by for the roundtable discussion indeed. Peter Ray Griffin, a leading exponent of process philosophy and theology. David Ray Griffin is professor of philosophy of religion and theology, emeritus at Claremont School of Theology and Claremont Graduate University. He is the author of several books, which include The New Pearl Harbor, Disturbing Questions About the Bush Administration and 9/11, and has published more than 150 essays. After attending Northwest Christian College and the University of Oregon from 1957 to 63, he attended graduate school in Claremont from 1963 to 68, where he earned his Ph.D. in 1970. He also taught at the University of Dayton for 5 years before returning in 73 to Claremont, where he remained until his retirement in 2004. David Griffin, our guest now on Coast to Coast. Hello, David. How are you? And thank you.
Thank you, George. I'm glad to be with you.
David, why don't you take a few minutes here, give us your thoughts, your statement on 9/11.
Well, Peter rightly focuses on things that he can prove. My own focus has been on things that you might say are disprovable about the official story. So I don't have a theory of what really happened that day. I have focused on the fact that there are numerous lines of evidence that point to the falsity of the official story. So my book, first book, The New Pearl Harbor, is constructed as a cumulative argument. That is, it says if you look, no matter where you start, if you look at the government's motives, possible motives prior to 9/11, if you look at its behavior, the fact that it had all these advance warnings that it lied about, the fact that so many investigations that possibly could have uncovered the plot were blocked by the FBI and other agencies. The fact that there's a very credible report that although Osama bin Laden was presumably our number one wanted criminal, he stayed in a American hospital in Dubai, was treated by an American doctor, and visited by the local CIA agent. If we look at the behavior after 9/11, the Bush administration referring to 9/11 as an opportunity, more blocks on investigations, evidence that Osama bin Laden was allowed to escape repeatedly in Afghanistan, the destruction of evidence, both related to the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, and then the constant refusal to release relevant information. But most importantly, if we look at 9/11 itself, if we look at all four flights, there are problems in the official story. Also, we've been given three different versions now of the official story. Makes you very suspicious. The World Trade Center collapses of the three buildings. These simply cannot be explained by the official theory, which is fire, or with regard to the Twin Towers, fire plus the impact of the airplanes. Only controlled demolition can explain the fact that the buildings collapsed and the particular way in which they collapsed. So this points definitely to an inside job. Likewise with the Pentagon, that cannot be explained apart from an inside job, regardless of whether you think it was Flight 77 or some military aircraft. Then the behavior of Bush and the Secret Service while Bush is in the school in Sarasota.
And let me ask you about that, David, because you're at your 3 minutes for your statement.
Okay.
Okay. You do, and you're very concerned about the behavior of the president and the Secret Service while he was at that school at Sarasota. Why is that?
Well, if you put yourself back in that situation, Bush had dismissed the first crash into the Pentagon, into the World Trade Center, saying what a terrible accident. But when the second strike occurred, there could be no doubt about this was a deliberate attack. And at that point, the Secret Service would have had no idea, assuming the truth of the official story, how many airliners had been hijacked, and they saw they're going for high-value targets. What would be a higher-value target than the President of the United States? So they should have assumed that they needed to get Bush out of the school immediately because his location had been well publicized. And evidently one Secret Service guy said as soon as he saw the second tower hit, we're out of here. But if he did, he was overruled by the lead Secret Service agent because he allowed Bush to stay in the classroom another 7 minutes or so, then to stay at the school a total of another almost 40 minutes. All that time, a hijacked airliner would have had to crash into the school, would have killed the Bush team and the Secret Service as well as all the people. So it looked like it's hard to understand their behavior. You know, a lot of people said, well, why didn't Bush assume control as commander-in-chief? But a lot of people aren't too surprised that Bush might not have known how to react. But the Secret Service is highly trained to respond instantaneously in such situations, and yet they showed no sign of fear whatsoever.
All right. Thank you, David. Some 45 kilometers down, so very close to it. So we'll monitor that throughout the night, too. It's be one of those evenings. Sounds like all of California is starting to rumble. Let's now go to Mike Levine. Mike Levine is the host of Expert Witness Radio, heard in New York City and Los Angeles. Mike is a veteran of 25 years of covert and deep cover operations for the DEA. He's one of the most highly decorated officers. He's also a world-recognized court-qualified expert witness, trial consultant, and lecturer in all matters relating to human intelligence, covert operations, narcotics trafficking, police procedures, RICO, and conspiracy investigations. He has also testified as an expert in more than 500 civil and criminal trials internationally and domestically. In addition, Mike is an author, lecturer, and has served as a consultant and on-air expert for various national television shows. And we will get his statement now on Coast to Coast. Hello, Mike. How are you?
Fine. Thank you so much for inviting me, George.
And
it's an honor to be on with the whole panel, two of which I know, Peter Lance and Dr. Griffith. And in fact, Dr. Griffith and I spent 2 hours politely disagreeing with each other. But his book, I think, is excellent in pointing out things that the American people should be made privy to. And Peter Lance, I have to say, is the only journalist who I really feel is on the precisely the same page with me. What is that page? I think the best place to begin is with a broadcast that I did on the Expert Witness radio show with four colleagues, actually three colleagues. Between the four of us, we had 102 years experience on the inside of Central Intelligence, FBI, DEA, and other agencies. Mm-hmm. The CIA agent was Ralph McGeehy with 25 years in international operations. Wes Swearingen, 25 years with FBI. Dennis Dale, about whom the book The Underground Empire was written based on his work. And, of course, me with my 25 years. And the purpose of those 3 hours of interviews was to predict 9/11 back in 1997. The basis of our prediction, and all of this comes from first-hand testimony, the kind of testimony that you put before an American grand jury, that you put before a court, before a judge, that you put people in jail as a result of. And we all concluded that we were in the hands of the Keystone Cops, who in turn were run by people whose last interest appeared to be the safety of the American people. Let me give you a first-hand example that I used during the show. I was undercover in Bangkok, Thailand, and Cambodia during the Vietnam War. And this was my first run-in with Central Intelligence. And posing as a mafia don, I managed to fool Chinese heroin dealers who were working out of the Golden Triangle area and made a very, very big heroin deal. This was the first time in my career, and you know, for those of you who research, you can find the case cited in Undercover by Donald Goddard. That's a Random House Times book. It's also mentioned in my own book, Deep Cover. What happened was Central Intelligence backed me out of a heroin case. They told me not to go with the Chinese heroin dealers up into the Golden Triangle, where I could have, at that point, identified the largest purveyors of heroin into the United States. Of course, later what we learned, and I just had lunch with the other fellow who had the case in New York, was that the people Central Intelligence protected in that particular instance were the people smuggling heroin into the United States, into the veins and brains of our children, in the dead bodies of GIs killed in Vietnam. Now, why would Central Intelligence protect people like that? Now, we're out of the field of ineptitude. Now we're into the field of political choices. And you'll see that those political choices carry right through to 9/11. The political choice was these heroin dealers were financing operations for the Central Intelligence into Vietnam. They were our allies in Vietnam. They had to be protected no matter what they did to the American people. If you leap forward, what you'll find is our support of the Mujahideen, we put almost $1 billion into the hands of bin Laden himself for the support of the Mujahideen.
Sure.
We trained Ramzi Youssef, the man who blew up the World Trade Center.
About a minute left, Mike, for your statement.
Okay. Bottom line of the whole thing is, and I'm sure over the next couple of hours we can go into it a little deeper.
Absolutely.
And the bottom line is that there are people running the government to this day. There is enough evidence, and I'll get into it later on in the show, to put people before a grand jury right now. Name them. The importance of that is, as we're speaking right this minute, George, all the intelligence we have indicates that nuclear terrorism is a matter of when, not if. We are not protected. So the results of this show are perhaps a lot more important than, well, I think all of the guys, all of the gentlemen on the panel and you realize that a show like this cannot, the importance of a show like this cannot be overstated, and that's why I'm doing this show. I'm really afraid for this country, and I think some of us, even though we want to do the right thing, we're misdirected, and we're taking us away. They're taking the eyes off the prize, and that is to get the best protection for the American people. And we can't afford straying any longer.
All right, I'm glad you're on the panel with us, Mike. Of course, Alex Jones, I call him the Bulldog. Alex Jones is an award-winning documentary filmmaker and political researcher. His news websites, Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, are at the forefront of the exploding alternative media. Alex is recognized by many as the father of the 9/11 truth movement, being the first to question the government's official story. His newest film is called Martial Law, 9/11, Rise of the Police State, detailing the latest 9/11 revelations. Alex Jones right here on Coast to Coast. Hello, Alex. Welcome back.
George, I tell you, this is the most anticipated radio broadcast I've ever heard of. And I want to tell you that I'm very thankful to be part of this panel, and I appreciate the gracious comments by the other panelists, and I appreciate you including me in this. I'm very honored.
Would not be the same without you, Alex. So why don't you give us some opening remarks, if you would.
Well, George, I don't want to toot my own horn, but on July 25th on my TV show and my radio show, I launched Operation Expose the Government Terrorist. I've never launched one before or since. I said, call the White House, call Congress. From all of my indicators and sources inside the Pentagon, Bin Laden is CIA, controlled by a group above the government, the shadow government, which they now admit is public. They are going to attack the World Trade Center. Bin Laden will take the blame, and his family will be rewarded with giant contracts. That video clip from the TV show is on Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. On the Coast to Coast AM site, you have a link to my facts page, where I have posted hundreds of mainstream articles, documents, interviews with German defense ministers, members of the British Parliament, Mr. Reynolds, dozens, Bob Dole's former chief of staff, everybody saying what I'm saying. So on the record, I predicted 9/11 specifically 2 months before, and for the next 2 months, every day, laid it all on the line. Let me launch straight into the key evidence. 9/11 is an inside job. It's a cross between the fourth and fifth scenario that you talked about earlier. We need to understand that the official story is a complete fraud, proven to be a lie from the start to the finish, up one side and down the other. The three official lines that all disagree with each other by the government are all total frauds. We have the official U.S. government document, declassified, a battle plan they tried to execute to hijack jets and crash them and blame it on foreign enemies. That's Operation Northwoods. We have Operation Gladio that was carried out from 1969 until 1979, 127 bombings in Europe, blowing up school buses, shooting nuns, and blaming it on the Soviets. We have the Gulf of Tonkin never happening, the LBJ tapes that have just been released, Hitler firebombing his own Reichstag, February 27th, 1933, the USS Liberty. All of these cases are examples of U.S. government-sponsored terror. That is a small group within it. Now we have the motive. We have PNAC and Dick Cheney in a September 20th, 2000 document, Rebuilding America's Defenses, that he wrote saying we need a helpful Pearl Harbor event to galvanize the people. We have the founder of the Trilateral Commission and the 97-book Grand Chessboard, Brzezinski, saying we need a unifying Pearl Harbor event for global empire to attack Central Asia. The motive is massive opium production exploding in Afghanistan, $3 trillion in oil in Afghanistan, $4 trillion in Iraq, hundreds of billions in weapon sales. Continuing, then there are all the smoking guns of 9/11, WTC-7. Larry Silverstein says they pulled it on PBS. The firefighters have said that the government pulled it. That was on local New York radio that day. We have all of that evidence, just masses of it. It is absolutely unbelievable. AP reporters.
30 seconds, Alex.
AP reporters were told, get back, they're going to pull the building. We have all of this evidence. We have the NORAD drills on 9/11 of flying hijacked jets in the World Trade Center and Pentagon at the exact same time it was really happening to fool the good military. And we have the public officials, Mayor Willie Brown and others, the night before getting a call, San Francisco Chronicle, AP, MSNBC, told not to fly to New York that next day, Joint Chiefs of Staff as well, MSNBC. And I have 547 other points all posted on the site. None of it can be disagreed with. It is totally and completely documented in my new film, Martial Law, 3 hours long, details this. There is no other way to look at it. All you can debate is the exact specifics of how this shadow government orchestrated these attacks.
Just a capsule of what you're going to hear tonight on our 9/11 roundtable discussion. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our 9/11 roundtable discussion with our four panelists. Two of you will be sharing basically what we call a phone line bank. So, and the other two will share the other one. So if you're going to cough, make sure you cough away from the phone or you're going to get on the air. Our guests, of course, Alex Jones, David Ray Griffin, Peter Lantz, and Michael Levine. And we will start by just opening up the discussion, if I can, with you, David. And then as we get into this, all of you feel free to jump in. Please just mention who you are, first name, and then we'll continue the discussion. You, David, to you, Alex, you, Peter, and you, Michael. One of my main concerns about all of this was what happened to NORAD on that horrible day on 9/11? David, what happened to them? They're supposed to react within 15 minutes, yet their reaction was very, very slow.
Well, it's a very good question, and it's really puzzling because now we've been given three different stories. Immediately after 9/11, we were told by General Myers, who was the acting head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and also Mike Snyder, the spokesman from NORAD, that they didn't send up any flights and try to scramble any planes until after the Pentagon was hit. So way over an hour had gone since the first warning. Then within a week, they had put out a new story saying that we did send up flights, but the FAA was so late in notifying us that we got there late in each case. A lot of people started doing the math and saying, just a minute, even if FAA was so late, you still should have gotten there given how fast your planes can scramble and then fly. So by the time of the 9/11 Commission, we got a third version, which was, the FAA, they gave us some warning about the first flight, but they didn't give us any warning whatsoever about the other three flights. And this previous story that had been the official story for 2.5 years and on the basis of which thousands of newspaper articles had been written, they just said, well, that was incorrect. Now believe the new story.
Yeah, George?
You go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, this is Mike Levine.
Okay, Mike first, then you, Alex.
Okay, well, all right.
Okay, excuse me, guys. Dr. Griffin, you know, first let me go back to the Secret Service reaction and speak from my own experience. I served on presidential details for the Secret Service. Nixon, President Johnson, I served on Wallace's presidential campaign. I served at Vice President Humphrey's. I went through their training schools. If they had reacted any other way than they did, it would have surprised me because the situation was so incredibly unique that these people, they're not automatons. And I've been there. I know that. And what I saw, the same video of the president, and what I saw was the head of this country frozen, scared to death, unable to make a decision. He's still in charge, and that's more frightening than what happened that day to me.
Well, this is Alex Jones, and sir, Dick Cheney was in control in the bunker under the White House, and later in the day at Site R, and it's on record what happened. On June 1st, they took the authority that they'd had since 1957 and the founding of NORAD. President Bush took the authority away from the generals and admirals to shoot down errant aircraft. That's always been their job, and gave it only to Rumsfeld, who is the adjunct, the minion of the president and vice president. They were running drills.
I agree with you,
sir.
Alex,
I reported on this 2 months before the Associated Press then announced the CIA admitted it. I have this from sources. Then, after I reported it, it all came out. Understand, drills of flying hijacked jets into the World Trade Center and Pentagon were going on at 8:30 in the morning on 9/11.
Yeah,
it cannot
Alex,
debated.
Again, Mike Levine, I agree.
That's the cover story. That's why the good military stood down.
Alex, I agree that what happened was atrocious. It demands an answer, and we're not getting answers. However,
I want to know why.
Hold on, Alex. Hold on.
I've put together well over 1,000 conspiracy cases before grand juries and cases. I've been trained by the Office of Professional Responsibility to review cases like this.
What about Operation Northwoods? You aware of that?
I'm actually doing what I did for the government.
You were the official U.S. government plan?
Here's the point. You can, if with all of that, to stop NORAD from reacting as it did, if you can't pinpoint a name, if you can't pinpoint some document, and you may be able to.
It's all posted on prisonplanet.com.
Yeah, I'd have to see it. But if you can't, there's a difference in throwing dots up there and connecting them. You can throw dots up there all day long.
Sir, it's admitted they were running the drills. What's the chances of running drills of the exact by the way, Bush says they never heard of such a plan. There were hundreds of news reports about Bojinko and all the programs of hijacking jets and flying them into buildings. Then Bush says he never heard of such a plan. Rice says it. Later, the specific memo comes out. They say they never heard of a plan. The day of 9/11, they ran a drill. 2 weeks before, 6 months before, 2 years before, 5 years before, they had gotten everybody so trained. Oh, why did they shred almost all the FAA tapes?
All right, hold on, Alex. Go ahead, Peter.
Alex, take over the show. I mean, Alex is the Rush Limbaugh of the left. He's a bully. He's going to just dominate the show. And I have to jump in here because I think the problem with guys like Alex, and I've been watching his martial law piece in the background. He talks about the Gulf of Tonkin. He spins this conspiracy theory like the Trilateral Commission, these puppet masters are up on top pulling the strings in our government. He lumps all these. He says he's got 500 documents that proves everything on his site. The problem with this kind of demagoguery, and that's exactly what it is that what you do is you allow the Philip Zelikos of the world, the executive director of the 9/11 Commission, to say they're all kooks. You know, anybody that questions us are a bunch of kooks.
Well, the real damage, too, Peter, right at this moment is that we have nuclear terror about to happen in this country, and we're being distracted.
Guys, hold on. We got 12 rounds here. You're all going to be out of gas by the third. Let's if somebody's talking, don't step over them, okay? Go ahead, Peter.
I think the problem with Alex and the way he operates is he's like Michael Moore. You know, he puts himself into every frame of the movies he's in. He makes it about himself. He bellows and screams. And what I've done in the two books that I've written, I've got my first book goes back 12 years. You can go to peterlance.com and you'll see documentary evidence of FBI failures over 12 years, Justice Department failures. I name names. David knows because he quoted large sections of my book that I looked at the 9/11 Commission report, which was a sham. But that doesn't mean, because the government was incompetent and criminally negligent, does not mean that Cheney and Bush conspired.